Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome. Welcome to another episode of Finding You with Mark and Stan Macklin. Thank you for listening and tuning in. We have another wonderful episode for you today. Please stand by, tune in, call a friend, and let them know that Finding You is on the air, live, and in color. And always, we start with the empowerment pledge, and that pledge is, I will work on myself. And if we can get you, our audience, to begin the process of believing in yourself, loving yourself, focusing on yourself, respecting yourself, then you too can become the best person that you can be. But it all starts with you, and it all starts with finding you, finding the principal thing in your life that you can begin to focus on to make you important, to make your life important, and to become the example, to become the model, to become the person that you have been born and destined to become, that can change the world that you exist in, change your community, change your life, change the world. And without further delay, we're coming to you live from our Harrisonburg studio. Stan Macklin, are you available?
Yes, Stan Macklin is inside of the studio.
Thank you, Stan. How are you, my brother?
Oh, man, I tell you, we've been enjoying the rendezvous with the ice and the snow, but it's the thing I like about being in this particular area, it doesn't stay. It comes and it goes, and I can deal with that. How about you?
I'm doing great, man. We've had some rainy days. This is our first sunny day in a while, and we took a nice trip to sunny Florida last week up until Sunday, man. It was beautiful, man. Loved it, loved it, loved it. Did not want to come back to this cold.
I can take
84 degrees every day of my life. 84 sunshine is what your friend needs.
And that's something. Well, bring some of that sunshine back with you. So,
well, we hope to bring some sunshine into the lives of our listeners as we talk about our discussion for today. And that topic is going to be the man. The man of the moment, the man of, I would say, this period in time that has really, and like President Obama said, he is the last great one. And so
we're
going to talk about Nelson Mandela. So I'm going to step to the side, and I will allow you, my friend, to talk about this man, and I'll jump in, and we'll talk about a great man today. So without further delay, Nelson Mandela.
Nelson Mandela, a great man. Don't step too far, brother, because I tell you, when we think about Nelson Mandela, what can we say? And I think to cover it in our time span, we probably need to look at him in basically three phases. Look at him as the man, message, and the method. So we can kind of just categorize ourselves in those three areas. We'll take a stab at it, but let's look first at the man. The man was born in 1918, and he, as you know, died on December the 5th, and 95 years old, so he lived a full life, and he did a lot. He did a lot during his time. And when we look at him as the man, we got to look at the country in which he was born, which is South Africa.
South Africa,
you know, if we here in America, because we know that our radio program goes all around the globe, and so there may be some people that are listening in, even in South Africa. But here in America, when you think of the South and the memories of what started and what took place in the South and what we went through as African Americans and as the struggle to deal with racial separation and segregation here. Just think about South Africa. It was even horrible worse. It was brutal. And the African Nelson Mandela was the founder of the African National Congress, which is the political party. It's the political party that he was elected under, and it's the party today. That's the ruling party today. But when they first came into existence, my brother, let's just tell it like it was, they didn't play. They was dealing with radical revolutionary tactics and strategy to deal with the oppressive, brutal South African government. And it was almost like a war. It was no plaything. It was real. And they would come into townships and they would just brutally, I'm sure you heard of the Soweto massacre. They come in and they would massacre and they would do things, and it was just horrible what they would do. So Nelson Mandela, who was an educated man, you know, it's hard to fight against anything without being educated. And he was a lawyer, and he just made up his mind, you know, kind of like, I hate to say it, but it's the truth, Malcolm X mentality, by any means necessary. They did what they had to do to resist that form of oppression. And and they would fight back. Yes, they would fight back with weapons and guns and different things like that and so forth to try to make a statement. And, you know, he, of course, was tabbed as one of the main ringleaders, and it was just horrible. It was horrible, the things that they did, some of the tactics that was used and so forth like that. And he was very much committed to the cause. Now, I want to ask the question, as we look at this man, sometimes the situation is so rough, so tough, that you have to change your tactics to be able to make a statement. Hopefully, in today's society, you make a statement that doesn't cause you to, well, the way the laws are today, you can't do things that harm innocent life and so forth like that. But what about fighting? Let's talk about fighting for the cause. In other words, getting down and, if necessary, dirty to make a statement of change. Change sometimes it's not coming about, and you got to do what you got to do for change. What about that?
Well, there are plenty of examples of where people have taken up arms to get their point across. And one in particular would be the revolution here in this country.
Mm-hmm.
People who have settled here decided that they were going to take a chance in fighting against Mother England to be free. And so that would be a great example.
You mean they were tired of King George? They had enough of King George, okay?
Yes. So I called her Mother England because she's our sister country, if you will, but the mother of this country is,
I understand what you're saying. They were tired of taxation without representation.
Yep. Yeah, exactly.
Ain't that what's happening in Washington, D.C.? I'm sorry, let's get back on the subject. I didn't mean that. Anyway, they took up arms.
Yeah, they took up arms because of the cause. Right, and for me, it's all about commitment to a cause and to a purpose that you're willing to lay down your life and all of the possessions that you have, and even the loss of your life in terms of what it would do for your family, the loss of the father or mother or son for the family, you know. And then we look at the United States Civil War, where the belief was the same. The South had firm beliefs in what they believed in. And many, many, many men on both sides lost their lives for the cause. And now we come down to this man here. And he didn't lose his life for the cause, but he lost time.
He lost
a great deal of his life in terms of time being confined for what he believed in. And I wanted to add this because we've talked about him so much this year, is Martin Luther King losing his life and his family losing a father for the cause in which he believed in as well.
Okay, that's a good point. I want to pick up on that, because as we kind of shift from the man to the message, you know, when the oppressive powers seek to crack down, they're definitely going after the ringleaders. You know, they're going after who they think is the instigators, the troublemakers, and to oppress them and to find ways to suppress that behavior. And so when he went to court and everything, they found him guilty, imprisoned him for life, what they did, and they put him in there. And, you know, I heard out of Nelson Mandela's own mouth, this is what I heard him say. He said that it was a good thing. Now, listen to this. Now, he was in there 27 years. He said it was a good thing that he went. He said because they were getting ready to kick up the notty. They were getting ready to knock it up another notch, where they were getting ready to start bombing and sabotaging security installations such as hospitals and schools. And he said he's glad he didn't go that route, because that would have been blood on his hands for the cause, and he didn't want to shed blood like that for innocent lives. But that was the next thing that was on the agenda, and right before they started moving into that realm, it happened, and he went into incarceration. And for 27 years, as we shift from the man, it started affecting his message.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
his message of by any means necessary, do we got to do to get their attention, it starts shifting, it starts changing. You know, I don't know. You know, it seems like oppression and that kind of just harsh behavior has a way of breaking a person down, breaking a man down. And in his case, it mellowed him. It really did, to the extent when he came out from after that, and his message had changed so that the global community started catching on to it, and there were sanctions that went across the board toward South African government. A lot of universities were challenged to deinvest all that money out of there, and the government, different things. And the squeeze was on, and the pressure came. And so the economic community, from a global perspective, it started making its voices heard that this is not going to be tolerated. And in the midst of all of that, the global community started rallying, and there was even in the music industry, they used it to be able to have rallies and so forth. And so the message took on a life of its own, and it started speaking to the heart of the government and from the pressure. And it came to the place where Dekert, they made to make a decision that they were going to release him.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the movie, which is called The Road to the Long Walk, The Road to Freedom. And when he came out, he did not look the same, and he did not talk the same. He had been in the pressure cooker of time. He was a changed individual. And his message was a new message, which was one of reconciliation and peace to end that evil system of apartheid, the separation of the races, which was bad because, you know, they had that caste system too. And so it just brought about a revolutionary change. And so this man is really like a patriot. He's like a George Washington of his country.
Yeah.
He really is. He really is. Which leads us to his method. His method took on a whole different sphere. And I think that's what happens to us sometimes, Brother Ron. I think we sometimes we're so stuck in where we're at that we can't adjust our methods to make a difference. What about that, my brother? He made a difference. Listen, 90 heads of state was at his funeral this week. 90 heads of state was there. A profound man with a unique message, with extraordinary methods to make a change. What about that?
Wow. That's incredible. When you think about it, you know, and I had a chance to really sit and reflect on this man's life and how powerful the use of his being was, man, to make a difference in the world, not just in South Africa, but in the world, and the impact that his very presence. Now look at, if you just go beyond his physical life,
mm-hmm.
the experience of being confined for 27 years seasoned
yes.
him for the complete outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And he said it, because his life would have been so very much different if he had become what it is that his oppressor was.
Mm. Wow.
He had to be, in so many words, taken out of the game in order
okay.
to complete his mission.
Okay.
So,
okay.
as he, man, imagine 27 years in a cell for what you believe in.
Wow.
And then to come out and become the president of the same country that you had no power, no freedom in. That's remarkable. That's God.
Yeah, and, you know, it has to be God, because let's face it, even today in the 21st century, there's different ethnicities. I think even in our particular locale here, we boast about 51 different languages that are spoken and so forth. But, you know, I say it all the time. Professionally, we're integrated, but socially, we're still segregated. We just
yes.
don't, you know, people still don't interact. People still, blacks and whites still, professionally, they get together and so, but socially, when's the last time you had somebody that don't look like you over your house for dinner? I'm sorry to go that way. But the point, what I'm just simply saying, there's still separation of the races. And in the midst of oppression, in the midst of brutal downright hatred toward each other, that brother, along with D. Kirk, sought to bring about a new method of lifestyle of getting along together as Africans. You know, and because some of those Africans, you know, the white Africans, you know, they felt that they had come there from, you know, the Dutch Reform and so forth, and they had just as much as right there as the native-born Africans, and they fought to defend that, but there was still separation. There was hatred. And he knew, Mandela knew, that in order for South Africa to be the kind of country that it could be, they had to unify the races. And they did that. They worked at that. They worked at that. And he's become iconic because of that. It's gone down into history. And I think that it takes an effort to be willing to reach out of your own ethnicity. I don't care who you are, Asian, African, Anglo, Latino, whatever. You know, it takes an effort to do that, you know, to practice that. And, you know, a lot of people say, well, I'm a Christian and I'm going to heaven, but they can't get down, they can't get along with the brother or the sister down here on earth, even if they're a Christian and they're a member of the LGBTQ community. They can't, you know, what the Bible say and so forth. And they're exercising hatred. I just don't understand, why is it that we can't look at the big picture and try to get along? Even Rodney King said, can we all just get along? And so I agree with you. It had to be God. It had to be God. Because that brother even shared a little bit of co-presidency for a while with D. Kirk. They worked together. I think they both got the Nobel Peace Prize together. President D. Kirk. And so, but the method is something that I think we got to change. I heard one South African say, I compare this man to Jesus Christ. Now, that's really up there.
Wow.
But that's the effect and the influence that he had on his life. And so, in the 21st century, is there work that still needs to be done today in terms of race relations? I wish some of our callers would call in. If you're listening, if you'd like to call in, feel free. 646-716-4702. And just push the one button, and we'll definitely get you on the air. But there's work still to be done, I believe, from all my heart. And we're still, we just become professional segregationists today.
Wow. Well, I would like to say, at this point in this process of recognizing a very powerful life of the man, Nelson Mandela, famously known as Madiba, which is a beautiful recognition of what a legacy that this man has, and that term of endearment and respect for him should be used very properly. And it is a term that reflects on what it is that his life was all about. Now, no man is perfect. No man is perfect. I think we can agree on that. But I think when you look at the long legacy of what his life stood for and what it meant and what he meant to sacrifice, as we talked about earlier, in terms of the time and the portions of his life that he gave for the cause. Now, and piggybacking on what you said about relationships, we don't know each other. We only, we know stereotypes.
Be scared.
We know fear. We know labels. We know false doctrine. And that is what we form our beliefs upon.
You know,
we can be honest and say why people of color of all kinds hate each other. Where is there a bridge or a gap between the race relations between Africans and Europeans or Caucasians? Where is that divide? And what we would say is, why they hate us? Or as the young people say, why they hating on us? Now, you're right. I haven't had anyone to come over for dinner. I will say I did have a young man to come over my house 2 years ago for New Year's. That was outside of the persuasion I am, and I'm thankful for that moment, and I appreciate that. But the point is, not very many have come and sat in my home to visit as a friend because we don't know each other. We don't know each other. Now, I was looking at, and I told you we were down in Florida, we saw all different types of races. And what popped in my mind was, we don't know each other. We don't know each other. And this country is always going to be three things. It's going to be the melting pot, it's going to be black, and it's going to be white. And everything else in between, that's just how it is. And if you go to South Africa now, it's going to be the same way. This world is populated by people, and people are going to have to live, love, and respect each other. They're going to have to live around each other.
Well, the demographics is changing here in America. It's, as a matter of fact, by 2020, it's coming closely. The Latino communities are going to be the majority in terms of ethnic reality that exists in terms of race. And so I know that's it's going to be definitely black and brown and black. And so I think that's a little uncomfortable for our white communities that are trying to maintain and retain that power. You know, power is something that people hate to let go. When you look at the structures and you look at you go around and look at your structures, you don't see that rainbow effect. You just don't see that. The inclusion is there. And I think I'm still in the midst of researching and studying this. I think that the economic disparities has a lot to do with it. I think when a person is making a base salary of $500,000 or half a million, I think that puts you in a category where you don't associate with people that's not in your category. You know, you can't identify with somebody that just quite not make, you know. And I've been to professional settings, and you know, because of my activist activity, I'm basically known in the city and so forth, but still those high class, highfalutin people, it was hard for them to humble themselves and come in and shake my hand, you know, and so forth,
yeah,
like that. But, you know, I don't have no problem. I know how to deal from the uttermost to guttermost, per se.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've traveled in third world countries, and we've been there and done that, from the palace to the shanty town. But I think that there is a subtle class system, class and caste system that exists, and it separates
mm-hmm.
us. And we don't really talk about the race thing. We're scared to do it. But you know what? 2014 is coming up, and I think it's going to be a new day. I know I'm making a commitment to embrace some of the principles of Martin Luther King and those freedom fighters in a way that's going to cause us to really think about inclusion at the expense of exclusion. And I think we got to quit having entertaining the haves versus the have-nots. You know, I even heard where some of the senators, they're going crazy. Seem like Congress is just going crazy. They're even talking about cutting out unemployment benefits or limiting it to because it creates a vicious cycle of dependency. Come on now. Everybody goes through adjustments in their life. And sometimes you need a helping hand to help you to the next level as you're in transition. But them fat cats that's in there doing all this talking and not practicing what they're preaching, wicked people behind the scenes, that's got to be dealt with. So I guess I'm a little fired up today. But the main thing of it is, when you look at a freedom fighter like this, he's really a George Washington of his country, because that system ended, and we're so glad it did.
That's true. Nelson Mandela is remarkable, man, and so many ways we can begin to try to practice patterning our lives in some way after this remarkable human being.
Yes.
One that wasn't angry or spiteful or evil or hurtful because of his incarceration. He wasn't angry or hurtful or spiteful toward his oppressors, but he was able to take the chains and the shackles off of himself and his oppressor to change a country. And in doing so, he managed to change the world in some way. His life and his legacy will live forever.
That's right.
Now, my last point before we get out of here is this. Our president is following in his footsteps. As he was the first president of South Africa, our president Obama is the first president of the United States, which we have very similar systems. And I'm very thankful that we had the opportunity to see both men at the same time. We got about 40 seconds left, Stan. What do you got?
I'm just so amazed that an individual who could allow his life to be used as an instrument in the hands of God to make a difference. We can make a difference if we're willing to look beyond ourselves and be open, that when the opportunity knocks on the doors of our heart, to answer it. And so I'm really grateful and thankful for this Patreon.
All right, there you have it. Nelson Mandela, the man. Join us again next week for Finding You right here on Blog Talk Radio. It's Marvin Rone and Stan Macklin. Have a great day. Look forward to being special to someone today. Peace.